What's up, guys? Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with
Coach Nick.
Coach Nick, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Very, very well. How about you?
I'm good. You know, it's an exciting time, of course, always in the challenge, where the May challenge starts just next week.
Yes. Right?
And at the time of recording this, you know, we had our live awards night on Friday night, which is really cool.
It was fantastic.
So that was live streamed to our Facebook group. And, you know, I think we had a couple of hundred people watching live.
We did.
And over the weekend, we had a couple of thousand people watch the presentation, which is really cool.
That's amazing.
So we got to crown a new top 10, a new top 3, new grand champions. Congratulations to Sel and Brooke, our Max and Maxine grand champions. Yeah, and then
congratulations, guys.
Congratulations to our People's Choice winners and our Community Choice winners. So it was an exciting night on Friday night. And if you haven't already, go check out that presentation. Coach Nick and I go through all of our winners, and it was a great evening.
It was fantastic. Yeah, very good.
Now, Nick, I'm going to start off with a funny story. Mm-hmm. Right? So it happened over the weekend, and I went to the beach, right? And I hate the sand, right? I dislike the beach. And when people on a warm day go, oh, I went to the beach, I'm like, that's the last place I want to go, right? It's just hot, the sand's hot, the weather's hot, and like the water's cold in Melbourne. It's just, it's not a fun time. And then you get sandy, you hop in your car, the sand in your car, don't like it, right?
You don't like the whole process of it all, do you?
No.
You don't like a bit of it.
But if I'm like on holiday, right. Yeah. If I'm on holiday somewhere, let's say I'm overseas, Southeast Asia or wherever I am, you know, that's nice. Okay, you go to the beach, whatever, but I can't really sit still. You know, like the classic view of someone laying the towel out and they're sitting on the beach reading a book or something like that. I could sit still for maybe half an hour, an hour, but to spend the whole day at the beach, not for me, right?
Yep.
Anyway, so I'm at the beach and I brought my little puppy to the beach, right? My puppy, Frankie, she's two. She's two. Terrible twos, Frankie. And she's a little cavoodle, more closer to a teddy bear than a dog, right? And she did not like the beach, right? Poor Frankie. She had sand in her little toe beans. She didn't like the water. She got scared of the little seaweed or little plant thing on the sand. And she was obsessed with this little shell that she was trying to eat. Like, you don't eat the shell. That's shellfish. So my little puppy, like, I thought she was going to be like a dog, right? It runs in the water or, like, you know, barks at the sea or does dog things. She didn't like that.
She just wasn't into it.
She was hiding behind my legs, shaking all over the place, and did not enjoy the beach at all. Poor little thing. But, you know, I was sitting there with my now fiance, and we were watching the ocean, and it was just nice just to sit and watch the waves, right? Watch the waves. And it kind of reminded me when I was younger, you know, sitting around a fireplace, and you just sit there and watch the fire. And it's almost like nature's TV, right? Mm. And I could just imagine, you know, across centuries of human existence, that was a common human experience of just sitting there and watching the ocean or watching the fire and, you know, telling stories, right? And, you know, when we really think about it, humans are storytellers.
Absolutely.
That's what we do. We tell stories to each other. It's how we understand the world. It's how we understand things. And it kind of comes across even within the challenge, like to explain certain concepts. Sure, you and I can go into full science mode and explain something as per a textbook, but to really understand something, we almost need to make it into a story that makes sense to people.
Of course, right? And then they can relate to it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think now many of us, you know, don't share our stories or don't think about our stories even.
No.
Right? Where, you know, I guess we get to be put in the spotlight sometimes and we get to tell our stories. And there's social media now over the past decade where people can tell their stories. But there's so many of us who simply don't think about our story, don't think our story is important, or think about the beginning and the end of our story.
That's right. And sometimes we just want to avoid thinking about our story.
Yeah. And one like powerful little takeaway when we're thinking about our story, our own personal story, is that, you know, we're the narrator, right? We are holding the pen of our story and we can determine where our story goes.
At any time.
At any
time. That's the thing.
Yeah, now, we have control. Do you like writing stories?
I love writing stories.
Yeah? Are you like a short story writer or like a bigger like...
I love short stories.
Short stories,
because it's quite easy to find a beginning, middle, and end, and it's nice to have a little twist and things like that.
Yep.
But my best way to relax is actually to read fiction. So I love getting immersed in stories. So writing, reading, telling, sharing stories. I love it all.
Yeah.
How about you?
I actually don't read a lot of stories myself.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I create lots of stories through the work I do. I read a lot more nonfiction work. But whenever I'm going to create a story or an idea or an analogy, I guess you kind of have to start with the end in mind, right? You almost like have to plan it. You have to plan kind of like that beginning, middle, end. Like where is the end or where is the punchline? And if you kind of think of like a joke, sometimes you start with the punchline and then you create the joke, right? And that's almost how we should be approaching the challenge, where we kind of start with the end in mind, like what's going to happen at the end and then how we're going to build our story, right?
Perfect. Yeah, how are we going to facilitate that ending actually happening? So as if we were writing it on a piece of paper, you visualize what the end is going to look like and then all you need to do is work towards that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because you almost had that goal and you work backwards.
Yeah, and it's almost happened because you've written down the ending. So it's just how do I get to that ending? But if you don't know what the ending's going to be, how are you going to get there?
And I think it's when we're thinking about our story, it's interesting to think about how we're going to tell the story at the end, right? Like let's say you're listening to this right now and you're in week 6 of the challenge, you're halfway and you're thinking about giving up. It's like, what story are you going to tell people? Like, let's say you've told some people at work, oh, I'm doing this challenge thing, and you're 6 weeks in, and then you give up. And then that person kind of goes to you, oh, you know, Jess, like, how's your challenge going? Sorry, Jess, if you're listening to this, but how's your challenge going? And you're like, oh, well, I gave up, right? What's it going to be like telling that story that you gave up? Versus if you went through a time of hardship, time of adversity, which you all kind of go through, right?
Absolutely.
How are you going to tell that story to that person? Being like, oh yeah, I got really hard in the middle, but then I did this, I just grind through it and I came through and look at my result now, right? So you are the narrator of your own story. You're holding the pen and you ultimately get to decide where that story goes and then really thinking about how are you going to tell that story to somebody else?
Yeah, absolutely. And how are you going to navigate those plot twists that do happen? Because guess what? Also, if it was just a story of A, B, C, no one would buy the story, would they?
No.
Because you have to have the twists. You have to have the turns. That's what makes you real. And people don't share their vulnerability enough.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, even myself who's about to do a competition, every now and then it enters my little mind to go, oh, I might not do it. So that's somebody who's been planning for ages to do it, you know, and how do I talk myself out of that?
Yeah. Now, do you know about tropes, like a movie trope trope?
Yeah.
You know, like things like a MacGuffin or things like, you know, like the you walk through a marketplace and there's a pickpocket that steals your thing and that's to suggest that the scene is, you know, whatever, right? So there's certain common themes that happen in stories and they're so common that within story writers and storytellers that they have names and nicknames. Oh yeah, this is this, that's that, this is it. You know, this is the hero's journey, that type of thing. And we see the exact same common stories happen in the challenge.
100%. We really do. And we sort of know the ending if it's not stopped and twisted in another way. We can predict the ending.
We do, because we've seen it so many times.
That's right.
And a really good highlight reel of all the common stories that we see in the challenge are some actually podcasts that I've done with previous top 10s. And if you've listened to a couple of them, you start seeing common stories and you almost hear me saying a common story being like, oh, well, this happens frequently, right? For example, a super common story within our top 10s is that someone who finished in the top 10 is likely somebody who has been fit when they were younger. And then life kind of got in the way where maybe over the course of 10 or 20 years, they put on a little bit of weight, they had kids, they moved house, they moved jobs, did all the things. And then they kind of woke up one day where it was like, whoa, I'm out of shape now. That individual had like the skills to get into shape. They had all the resources to do that. But it wasn't until that moment that they decided, okay, it's time for me to do something.
Yes.
Then that individual needed something like the challenge to keep them goal orientated, time focused to get that result. And they did. They did an amazing job. Right? That's a common story. On the other side, there are common stories why people give up. And it's often around our other priorities in our life. First and foremost being our family, right? We're always going to put our family first. And that might actually be a reason why you're unhappy with your body is because you always put your kids first or your partner first or your parents first, someone else first, rather than putting yourself first.
Very true.
Right? And that's often the reason why you end up failing is because you have other priorities. If it's not family, sometimes it's work-related commitments. Oh, you know, I'm working 14 hours a day. I don't have time to go to the gym. I don't have time to meal prep. I don't have time to do these things, right? So often, you know, these are common barriers that we face.
Definitely. definitely. And if we can't work out a way to go around those barriers, they will just stop us forever, because there's never a good time and your story is never going to be perfect.
No.
It's just, there's never going to be a clear road. It's almost like the resistance that you're seeking is not just in the gym, but you know, you're seeking to push against all sorts of resistance in your life, and it's like, how do you overcome each bit of that to get to the next level?
Yeah. Nick, do you like Friends, the TV show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know that episode where...
I think it's on Stan now. I'm trying to get my kids to watch
it. Yeah, yeah. You know that episode where Joey gets a thesaurus?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And he's like trying to write like a letter or something, and he's trying to sound smart, and he changes all his words so much that it doesn't make sense anymore. And it's like, sign baby kangaroo, like Joey baby kangaroo. And I have a friend of mine, right? He's like the smartest dumb guy you know, okay? You know those types of people where it's like, he's my go-to for physiology. So like, I know some things around like human physiology. He knows the next step. So if I don't know something, I go to him. Yeah. Smartest guy I know, but then also an idiot, right? Mm. And in the nice way, I love the guy. And he, when he speaks, tries to use like big words.
Oh, does he?
So much so that you're kind of like, wait, what are you saying?
You're just trying to tell me arm.
Right? You know? Right? Yeah. And I think the words we use are quite powerful. Mm. Not so much in a thesaurus where we use the same word to a different meaning, but the words that we use from day-to-day life have certain meaning to us. Right.
Yes.
And this is very like, you know, NLP or Tony Robbins-esque, but, you know, take something like our hunger level. If you are starving, or you tell yourself that you're starving, you're going to eat like you were starving, right?
True.
If you told yourself that, oh, I'm a little bit peckish, you're going to eat like you were peckish, right? Or I'm snacky. You're going to eat like you're snacking. And you could start to see the difference, like, oh, I'm snacking versus I'm feasting, right? Mm. Two very different actions. But for some people, they have the same kind of meaning, or once upon a time they were different, but then now they're the same thing. Oh, I'm starving. It's like, well, you just kind of ate, right? Same as the word like hate. You know, people are like, oh, I hate traffic. It's like, do you really hate traffic, or is it just annoying, right?
Inconvenient.
Is it inconvenient? It's like, oh, I hate the wind. It's like, oh, well, do you really hate it? Yeah. Like, you know, yeah. So some of us use language in a certain way that can almost pre-program our story.
Absolutely. Right? Especially if you say something like, I always do something. If it's in a negative way, like, I always get up later than my alarm.
Yeah. And all of my take is that you change that phrase, use that thesaurus inside of you and go, oh, well, I get up to my alarm. I don't always sleep in or something, right? Just that internal dialogue of your story inside might be enough to change it, right?
Even like with the NLP, even if you said, I would prefer to get up earlier.
Right.
That's another one that you can say. And it doesn't mean that you're doing it yet, but it just starts to get your brain into that mode where it's like, oh, it could be a possibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's kind of like you're inviting that idea into your brain, right?
And sometimes that's all you need to do as well with baby steps. You just invite the idea and you don't discount that. You don't sort of discount the idea from happening that you might get up early.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
One thing I kind of nitpick on a little bit, in terms of words, is when people say that they're busy.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah.
So if you use the words like, oh, I'm always busy, I'm busy, it kind of like, in my eyes, suggests that, you know, you don't have control over your time. And that could be a thing where you've got so many things going on that you don't have control over your time. But changing that word busy to something like, my day's full, I've got a full day, right? Then it kind of changes that internal dialogue, being like, oh, yes, I'm doing lots today, it's a full day, not a busy day. Busy kind of suggests, you know, rushing all the time and, you know, you don't have control over your time. But if your day is full, okay, I have control of my day. I fill in every single minute so that it's productive, right?
Yeah.
And just that small change can change a day from being, oh, I'm really busy, I don't have time to train, being like, oh, I've got a really full day, but I can make time because I'm in control of my schedule.
Yeah. Right? And so you and I, we both make time to train. Say today we're in together all day, but I train early, you train after.
Yeah.
So we always make the time, even though we're in here all day from pretty much when, you know, in the morning all the way till it goes nearly dark.
Mm.
But we make time around that, even though, you know, we could be tired, we could be very, you know, occupied at work doing different things. But there's certainly no time within the day that we can choose to train.
No.
You know, so we both make time either side of that. Yeah. So there's ways.
Yeah. Even just thinking about that, like, you know, after this working day here, I'm going to go home and train. I'm still training at home. yes, it's not a big day compared to some people's days, but, you know, I drive a small way to come here. And, you know, by the time I'm getting into the gym, I've had a full day of work. It's getting close to, you know, seven or later. Yeah. And it's kind of like, oh, I genuinely feel tired.
Yeah. Right? You could easily say to yourself, oh, not today.
No. And I could easily sit on the couch being like, oh, I'm exhausted. I'm just going to sit here and watch Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can use the language of like, oh, I'm a little bit tired, but I'm still going to get some work done.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can be like, I feel energetic, I'm going to go do this, right? And sometimes I go and train and I'm genuinely exhausted and I don't have a good session. And that happens and that's okay. Does that ruin my entire fitness career? No. I just go in there the next day, right? And then I might use the language like, oh, I was a little bit off today, but tomorrow's another day, right? Yeah. But I don't let that beat me up. So that's my story. It's like, oh, you know, I have some off days, but it's still good to go.
And the best thing is when you actually let go of this 100% mentality where it's like, I'm 100% perfect at my training. I'm 100% perfect at my meal plan, things like that. Once you let go of that, you'll find that you actually do better because you don't have that standard to live up to.
Yeah.
You know, like, because your version of 100% would be to hit every little thing that you program for yourself, feeling perfect every single time because you programmed it, so you should be feeling good.
Yeah.
With all your periodization, all the stuff that you know, we should be feeling good every time. But the body doesn't work like that. And the mind doesn't work like that. So the mindset that you need to adopt is, oh, well, there's another day tomorrow to get it done again. And there's another chance and another chance. And another that's where it adds up.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're completely right where it's not about those always nailing like the perfect workout or the perfect nutrition plan. Because like a mediocre consistency is better than like a non-consistent, like perfect attempt, right? And what's that saying? Like the science is in consistency. Like it's all about just giving it a go, going and doing it.
I do believe that because I think, look, I mean, I don't really understand how 10 years has flown by so quickly for me, but I've now got, you know, at least 10 years, if not more of weight training under my belt. So it's just, it happens. The years pass. Yeah. I'm sounding old now, but the years do pass. Yeah. So if you create that routine, suddenly you'll find you have 1 year, 2 years, 3 years behind you. And then suddenly like everything starts coming together for you, you know? Whereas if you let the time pass by anyway, the time ticks. Mm-hmm. That's like inevitable.
Inevitable.
So just microcosm of that. Just say you decided to watch Friends and not train. Mm. That's one day. But then the thing is, the time will pass anyway. You sat there watching that. Has that made you feel any better either way? Maybe a little bit ha-ha, whatever, but you haven't done your workout. So, therefore, the time's passed. And if you did that again and again, time would pass and you wouldn't have achieved anything.
Yeah, yeah. A short story.
Okay.
Touching on a few points you just did.
Yeah.
So, once upon a time, before I studied my degree at the moment that I graduated with, osteopathy that I studied, I was studying exercise science years ago. And what I did was I went and did a semester overseas. I went and lived in Sweden, of all places. So I lived in Sweden for 6, 7, 8 months or so. And it only caught my attention because I saw one of those Facebook timeline things, right? I was like, that's from, you know, what it was, like 8 years ago.
Was that blue thing, blue and yellow?
Yeah, it was blue and yellow. Yeah. So that was a photo that I saw. Yeah. And at that time, I was very much Sporty Steve, right? You know, I was studying exercise science and I was overseas and I was the fitness guy overseas, blah, blah, blah. And I looked at myself and I was like, oh, geez, you were a skinny boy, right? As in I was like really small. And I guess when I look at myself being skinny or being small, I would say like, oh, you don't have any muscle, right?
Yeah.
And over that time period, which doesn't seem like a long time, all those small daily decisions to prioritize fitness has led me to a point now where I'm like, okay, I've put on a lot more muscle over that time of consistent training.
That's right. It takes time, doesn't it? It absolutely takes time.
Then after the story kind of continues on to your next point where after my time in Sweden, I realized that I wasn't a true fan of what I was studying, right? Even though I'm kind of in a sports science field now, but a little bit different. I mean, within osteopathy, within healthcare. Anyway, after my time in Sweden, I didn't go home. I kept traveling around Europe. Then I found myself in Canada where I was living at a ski resort and I was teaching snowboard instructors, not snowboard instructors, I was teaching snowboarding to to kids, right? So I was living in Whistler, and then I did a road trip around the States, and then I found myself on a cruise ship, right? So I was living on a cruise ship for a while, and anyway, years went past of me gallivanting around the world, and I had to decide, okay, that was great for a couple of years, but I haven't really achieved anything. I gave up on my first university degree. I was gallivanting around the world and, you know, drinking, doing whatever I was doing. And then I had to decide, okay, I want to achieve something. Yes. So then I had to come all the way back to basics and go and study a degree. And here I am now as a, you know, whatever a professional means, right? So I could have easily continued to go on and travel around the world. I could have found myself in, I don't know, some diving resort in Mexico and lived out my days there. But I wouldn't have achieved anything that I have achieved now. And that's exactly the same as all those decisions that we make every day. Am I going to go to the gym? Am I going to eat a salad? Am I going to drink more water? Or am I going to sit on the couch, watch Friends, have a tub of ice cream and a Coke, right?
Yeah, every single one of those decisions is either a green light or a red light, I suppose, either stopping you from making progress or just that little bit more progress. So
yeah,
green light, red light decision every single time you do anything. Even just, you know, we've both got our water. You usually have your water. You know, we've decided to have water every single day. I mean, then it becomes a habit, I suppose, and you don't think about some things and they become automatic.
It comes out of part of our story of who we are.
Exactly. Right? And that's sort of where you want to try and get, and if you can get in the challenge and get those habits and things where some of those things become automatic and you stop telling yourself that you never get up early, or you stop telling yourself that you always have to have dessert. You know, that's another story I've been working with a lot of women over the years. It's always like, I eat, but then I feel like something sweet. And it's sort of like, is it just now programmed into you to feel like that? Have you decided that? Or do you really stop and go, I have to have something sweet or I shall die?
Yeah.
You know, which one is it? Is it habit? Is it just part of your nighttime routine where you sit down and watch television? And that's fair. That's everybody. But just towards your goals, how can you put a red light on that and put a green light on maybe, say, a peppermint tea or something? Create a new habit. Little tiny, tiny habits, because they do add up.
They do add up. Yeah. You know, talking about habits, just quickly, I was recently listening to another podcast where they were talking about research, right? Because these are the podcasts I listen to. I listen to research podcasts. And they were talking about a study, I think it was maybe in 2005 or six, where they were looking at the average weight gain of an American, right? You know, our friends over in America are not too different from us. And they were suggesting that the average American gains half a pound of fat per year, right? And that half a pound of fat can be about 500 grams, right? I mean, about half, and is about 3,500 to 4,000 calories, depending on which scientist you're talking to, right? So that means that the average American is consuming over a year an extra 4,000 calories compared to what their maintenance would be. So they're gaining half a pound each year.
And this is consistent.
This is consistent. Yeah, so that's the thing. If you were to divide that by 365 days, right, that ends up being about 10 calories per day. So so the average American gaining half a pound of fat per year is only eating an extra 10 calories above their maintenance per day throughout the whole year, right? So talking about these small habits, this can be quite empowering, where you go, well, okay, you know, if we convert that to Australian units, right? So the old metric system, right? That can equate to 500 grams of fat that you gain per year just through life, right? You know, too many Christmases or work functions, all the things that we do in life.
And that'd be baseline. I'm sure there's more.
There'll be more, yeah. And, you know, 10 calories per day can be such a small thing. That could be one less scoop of ice cream, one less peanuts.
Yeah.
That could be, you know, one less serving of food. Or even if you want to have that muffin, instead of getting a large muffin, you have a small muffin, right? So these small changes can compound, where we go, okay, if you want to lose half a pound, you know, a pound of fat in a year, which will be half a kilo, if you wanted to lose that, that can just be a few small changes in your day-to-day life, a few small changes to your story, so that it becomes normal.
Yeah, like say, for example, I always have sugar in my coffee. Just even that, you know, that'll be your 8 calories. So right. You could say, I'm now starting something new where I don't
yeah.
have the sugar. You still yeah. have the coffee. You still have the milk. You know, don't go crazy. Don't go cray.
No, cray.
But just that's the first little yeah. step if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah.
And then you can start to sort of clean up your story even more just to make yourself more powerful.
Yeah. Because like my partner, her dad, I think it was Christmas time last year, was like, oh, that's it. I'm cutting out sugar in my tea. Big yeah. tea drinker. So for this gentleman, he drinks multiple cups of tea throughout the day. And every single tea that he has, it's a half a scoop or a scoop of sugar. And he cut that out completely. And I saw him just the other day and he had lost a whole bunch of weight. And he's like, oh, I haven't really done anything other than cutting out the sugar in my tea.
Yeah, they're the best stories that you hear. That's like Shane, my husband, when he wants to lose weight. He seriously just cuts out milk in his coffee and a couple of beers. Still consumes quite a few on the weekends, but just cuts out a couple.
Yeah.
And it's good old Shane's lost everything that he needs to lose really, yeah. really quickly.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think when people are not so extreme and attached to an outcome as well, they're just, you know, you can plan your story, but you're not, it's not do or die. It's like, well, hang on, let's just try this, try that. And, it doesn't have to be excessive. I think that that's very successful. It's a very successful way to get to the end in a good position.
Yeah.
And also to know that your story continues on, and that's why we've got a lot of successful people that repeat the challenge and sort of do better and better every time as well.
Because you add on to your story, right? Mm. It's like the next saga of your adventure.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, people become addicted because it's like, well, what's the next chapter going to be for me? I can't just leave it here.
Mm.
You know, my character deserves a main part in this story. You know, and that's where you want to get to, because you've got to realize that you are the only person that can write this story. So even if your mean old boss says, you have to stay an hour late, and you go, well, that was my workout time. It's like, did your boss really stuff your whole story up, or is that just a little twist in the story and you go, okay, maybe I don't have time to work out tonight, but I do have time to take the dog for a walk with my partner or something like that.
Yeah.
And even that is enough for your story for that day.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm.
Well, look, I think it's important to talk about within stories, the common parts of stories, and in that it's common that we face hardship, right? And the challenge, as the name suggests, is going to be a challenge. If you've never done the challenge before, it's going to challenge you. It's going to challenge you physically, mentally, emotionally. It's going to challenge your behaviors, your routines. It might challenge your social life, your family life, and basically every aspect of your life, right?
Absolutely. If you're not used to structure, I think in prep week you'll have a look at it, and the structure can be overwhelming until you look at it all and break it down, and then you realize that there's a lot of freedom in the structure, because you free up so many other parts of your life because you don't have to think anymore about those bits. You just do them.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
What's that saying? Like, you know, freedom in discipline?
Yeah, right? It's true. Yeah. It really is, because it's not an option. Those bits are not an option. So you can have many other options in your life, but they're not an option.
No.
So.
Well, Nick, would you like to take us through maybe a story of how you had to kind of overcome adversity or like a tough time, maybe like a, you know, a fitness related
thing? Let's do a sporty one.
Yeah, something that we all can relate to. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So tell us a story, because, you know, I think this is important that, you know, we all kind of go through tough times. Yeah. And yeah, sure, sometimes you and I might be painted in a way that, oh, you know, everything comes easy to us, which it doesn't. No. You know, we all have our tough moments, and those moments that we want to give up, those moments that we want to throw in the towel. So do you want to like tell us a little story about
something you can relate to? I reckon doing the Ironman back in 2015, it was a beautiful day. Like the water was clear, like glass. It was a gorgeous swim. Not a problem. Turned up on my bike. I hadn't really worked that bike before, actually. To be honest, it was the first time I rode that bike. It was a new bike. First time I rode it in there. So I put it on the wrong chain, which just meant that I was actually riding on the small chain ring for ages before I realized. So that was a lot of power wasted.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway, look, I did the 180k ride, and that's up and down East Link if you're in Melbourne, just from Frankston to like Springvale Road, about three times. It's massive. And you're on your own a lot, so you've got a lot of time to think. And so I mean, that worked out okay as well, but what happened to me was that I got pretty badly sunburnt, and when I got to the run, it was a big struggle to get from Frankston to St Kilda. And I really had to tell myself basically that I was not going to give up. I mean, that sounds pretty cliche, but hang on. Yeah, so it was just, I'm not going to give up one step at a time. So that was another thing. So when you're sort of really in that situation, Oh my gosh, I'm about to cough. Hang on. When you're in that situation where you've got adversity, when you take things one bit at a time and you break it right down, that's something where you can really see what you're made of. Mm-hmm. Like everything's a real test. And you actually start to have moments with yourself where you go, what is going to happen to me? Like people start kind of falling over in front of you, like in the Ironman. It's not like a normal race because people have gone hard. People don't like have their nutrition. Guys are crying, like they're throwing up and weeing. It's really weird. Yeah, it's like a war zone. Right. And you have to tell yourself a story to get through. Mm. And mine was just, I'm not going to give up. I just went on autopilot and just took one step at a time. And I refused to listen to what my body was saying. I was just very much in the moment and I was like, just 1K at a time, 1K at a time. So when somebody said to me, you've got 7Ks to go, and I thought I had 6, I nearly lost it. Yeah. Even though I'd done so many Ks, because it was like, I was so in my zone that I needed to have that exact amount of stuff that nothing was going to stop me. And so I just had so many moments with myself over that time where I wanted to give up a lot. And like, it's just not even true to say it was like perfect. It was just so many times I thought, who cares if I just walk off?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
No one's going to know.
No. So that's another thing where you go, no one's going to know. Even if at the time, because I was teaching at so many places, I had so many people waiting and watching and like supporting me along the way and making signs and everything. But I didn't care. So it was like, what got me through? Just this grit, you know, and you can't buy grit.
No.
So I think it's just in my story. My story is I will never give up. Yeah. I think the Ironman is sort of something that I will always remember as a big challenge on my body. And I know that when I got back, I did not get changed out of my uniform, my riding uniform that I'd also had a swim in and everything. I had the gels in my pocket. I had my hands like claws and I just fell asleep like that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I just had sunburn everywhere. So it was just insane. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah.
Tough.
Yeah, that or childbirth. I don't know which one you want. because I'll just quickly say for the mums out there, I'd made a decision that I wanted a drug-free birth. Like it doesn't matter what time of birth you have. It's just all. But you have to have a moment also with your body where you say, I will not give up. When you go to that pain cave and it sort of tests you, what are you made of, but also like how do you navigate the twists and turns? So there's some things that I put my body through where I know that it's good and that's why I respect it. Even if sometimes I feel annoyed at it, I can really respect it.
Yeah. Jeez, sounds
tough. I nearly died telling you. I nearly had a coughing fit telling you.
No, that's amazing. Yeah. I think, you know, just breaking down those moments where you kind of want to give up. You nobody's going to know that you stop. Nobody. And what do you even tell yourself in those moments where you kind of go like, well, fuck, like who am I doing this for? What am I doing this for? Like this is...
Yeah, it's not worth it. You know, what is it for? But the thing is, I can't even explain how much that was worth it because it basically shaped my entire cycle career from there on in.
Yeah.
Like I was, that gave me entry into, you know, so many different studios around Melbourne, you know, eventually creating my own business with all of that, learning a lot about the science and data behind cycling and behind endurance racing and stuff. And if I hadn't have gone through that plus many other races myself, how am I going to know?
And
how am I going to help other people as well? Because I can read a book and go, yeah, the body goes through that, but it's like, I remember when my body started feeling like that.
Yeah.
And then it's like, alternative ways to fuel yourself. How could I stop that from happening next time? What did I do wrong there? Why did I do an Ironman when I weighed as much as a powerlifter? Like I had a lot of muscle when I was doing that Ironman, and yeah, that's expensive to carry. That really is very taxing. It was like I was wearing a weighted vest doing it too, and that's my own fault. I just didn't plan enough because I coached myself through all of that.
So yeah.
I didn't have much of a clue, you know, about the different ways to actually train properly until I'd studied it all after.
So you use that as almost like a learning experience to keep going. Right.
Well, everything that I ever do sporting-wise is a learning experience. That's why I I sometimes forget that I need to be competitive because I'm so stuck in learning about myself that my biggest hurdle, and this is a story that I tell myself, but I shouldn't, but I sort of say I'm not competitive. But then the thing is, if you don't watch out, people will steamroll you as well. And so you've got to say, with my story, I've got to say, oh, hang on, I can be competitive when I want to. And of course I'm competitive because I wouldn't be doing all this stuff. So that's sort of a story I need to tell myself to make sure that I honour how much I can bring to the plate. Yeah, so that's like what I work on. So even people in this challenge might say, I don't want to put my pictures up, I don't want to compete against anyone. But that sort of stuff is really just really helping you to be accountable to what you're doing and to keep yourself on your journey. So when we see people even post publicly, you know, within the Facebook group, their progress and stuff, don't you think that often you then see that those people are really up there in the end because they've kept themselves accountable and they've written their story as they go?
Yeah. No, we definitely see that correlation when those who post more on like our Facebook groups, on Instagram, in their journals, on the forums, those who are more engaged online telling their story end up having a higher success rate.
Mm.
Maybe it is something about, you know, committing themselves to an idea, an ideology, a cult, whatever it is, right? They're committing themselves to a higher purpose and that makes part of their story and they can't give up because it's almost like if you know who you're giving up for, like, okay, I'm giving up because, you know, my partner or whatever like that. Okay, that's one thing. Mm. But if you're giving up and there's going to be more people around that you don't know of, you get this higher sense of, I have to do this.
That's right. And also if you get the sense of it's not just for you, you don't know who you're inspiring. Once you decide to commit to this journey, you're going to be inspiring people around your close circle, but also people that you don't even know, that people at work, people that might see you on your Facebook, a friend of a friend, the people in our group. You know, you are then, you actually have a responsibility to everybody once you start to be in the fitness world.
You do.
Because there are people that are going to look up to you and say, how do you do it?
Mm.
Even if it's your first time picking up a barbell or a resistance band, someone's going to go, how do you do that?
Yeah. I think for me, whenever I have like a goal or a pursuit, this might be counter to some advice that some people might give you. I tell a lot of people what my goal is so that I'm almost like reiterating what it is and make myself accountable to more people. Mm. And then it also like further solidifies that this is what I'm going to do.
Mm.
And I've done a couple of things within my fitness career. Like, you know, I've competed in a bodybuilding show, which I won, and I competed in a marathon. I've done longer events such as like Oxfam and stuff and competed in a few other small competitions in between. But I think like the more that I tell people, the more that I confirm and solidify the journey that I'm going to take, right? And all the shitty parts that comes along with that, right? But, you know, I've got kind of a similar story to yourself, Nick, and I've kind of spoken about this in one of the podcasts in the past, and it was my time, maybe we'll talk about doing my marathon that I did. Mm. And this was in 2018, right? So just a couple of years ago.
I know.
Seems really. Like it. And so my story in life is that I've always been like the fatter kid, right? You know, growing up, I was always like the chubby kid in class, and I was always like really poor at sports. Even though I tried, I was never like as good as the other boys that I was competing against and such. And then I lost a lot of weight, and I kind of became more of a strength guy. So I was in the gym, I was weightlifting, I was always lifting weights, and I never enjoyed doing like cardio based work. Mm. And when I was younger, I used to be a swimmer and such, and you know, that was very different to running events. So, in high school, I played lacrosse, and when I was playing lacrosse, I ended up rupturing my ACL. And through that pathway of having knee pain and all the fun thing that comes along with that, I ended up finding myself in the gym, and I was a gym rat. I was lifting weights. I didn't really need my knee. I didn't need to change direction or anything like that. Then it started, like my knee started to burn, and it started to get like swollen and stuff, and it was just becoming really irritating. When I got an MRI, yes, confirmed ACL, and I went through the process to have a reconstruction. So this was like February 2018 that I had my ACL reconstruction. At the time, I was studying osteopathy. And after the event, I was like, I want to rehab myself. I need to prove to myself that I can rehab someone. And who's the best person to rehab? It's myself. Yeah. So I was rehabbing myself. Once I got clearance from another healthcare professional to start exercising properly, this was, I think, maybe 5 months after my surgery, I went on a run. I was like, oh, well, now that I can run, I want to run.
Mm.
So I went for a run around just literally my block, which was only like a kilometer or 2 kilometers. And I was a broken man, right? Like my foot was hurting, my hips were hurting, my back was hurting. Like I was out of breath. I was huffing and puffing. And I was just like, you know what? Like,
what's this?
I'm gonna do this, mm-hmm. right? So I ran a little bit more. And it wasn't really a structured thing. I was like, oh, I just want to run to prove to myself that I can run yes. if I wanted to. So I started running a little bit more, a little bit further. And, you know, I started to get a few more aches and pains. Like I started to get a little bit of plantar fasciitis, or plantar fasciopathy, you know, like heel pain. I got a little like back pain while I was running. I was like, what the hell's happening? So I had to go and like figure out what's causing this pain and prove to myself, hey, I can run. So, you know, this like 1K turned into 2Ks, turned into 3Ks, 4Ks. The next thing you know, I was running like a 10K. And I was like, okay, I'm like, this is all right. And a friend of mine was like, oh, like, why don't you sign up to a half marathon? And I was like, I don't do half-ass things, right? I was like, I'm going to sign up to the full thing. So on a whim, I was just like, click, Melbourne Marathon, yeah. right? And from that time, the Melbourne Marathon was in October. So since I started running, it was maybe like 3 or 4 weeks in from my running experience, and the marathon was 8 weeks away. I was like, yeah. Right. So I very quickly like vamped up my volume training in running and quickly learned how to run. And over this 8 week period, I went from like running a 10K to running a few half marathons and then eventually going and doing this marathon. Mm. Right. And I remember the week before, you know, normally like this tapering week or whatever you want to call it, I went and tried to do my longest run, which was 33 kilometers. And if you ever run like in the suburbs, which you would have, like running in the suburbs is very different to running in like the actual event. In the actual event, you're running on the road, you know, there's all this space and stuff in between.
Definitely.
You've got water stations along the way, all the good things, people are cheering you, but you're running in the suburbs, like there's no water unless you're carrying a water bottle.
Crossings all the time.
There's crossings, there's traffic. Yeah, right. So I remember I broke down at kilometer like 31 of this run that I was doing. Or maybe it was in kilometer 30. I was a few kilometers away from home.
Yeah.
And I remember that my legs just stopped.
Yeah.
And I was just like trying to tell my legs keep going, but I was just like, nah. I was trying to walk, couldn't move my legs. So I was just sitting down on a nature strip in the middle of like this suburb.
Yeah.
And I could imagine that whoever lived at this house would have just been like, who's this guy sitting in my nature strip? And I've just been running for like, you know, 5 hours. And I was like, oh, I'm just broke. Like, I can't do this. Ended up having to call a friend of mine to pick me up and drive me home, right? And I remember I was sitting at home and I think I was watching like the NRL or something, just under blankets, just in like a heaping, like, how the hell am I going to do this marathon next week? If I couldn't even get like, you know, 30-ish kilometers there. I couldn't even get 3/4 of the way there. How am I going to do another like 10 kilometers, right? So then the day of the event comes along and, you know, it's fun and excitement. And if you ever run like an event, like from a fun run to a half marathon to a full marathon, it's a fun day, right? There's people cheering. There's lots of noise and commotion and stuff like that. Right? It's a big buzz.
Definitely helps to get you through.
So I knew in the back of my head that kilometer 30 is just going to be shit. I knew that, right? And it's probably the worst thing to put in my mind is that the kilometer 30 is going to be shit, because I knew that as soon as I hit kilometer 30, it was going to be shit no matter how I was feeling.
Yeah.
So anyway, 5 kilometers in, happy days. 10 kilometers in, happy days. I remember the half marathon timer, there was a little photographer guy there, and you know, I was cruising. I was like, oh, halfway? Cool. I don't know how hard could this be.
You put your thumbs up and being all happy.
And in Melbourne, we left like the MCG, we were running past Luna Park, and I remember running down St Kilda Road, and it was this point where you run down St Kilda Road and you literally do a U-turn and you come back, right? And it's a slight uphill, and I was like running back towards Luna Park, and I was just like,
I hate it when you have to go back towards something you've already been towards.
Yeah. Right? And I was like, oh, okay. And then things just kind of start to slow down a little bit, right? You know that feeling where, you know, the excitement's gone, like there's less people cheering you on because you weren't really at the start. You were literally the furthest away from everything.
It's all spread itself out. Right? People are on their own times now. Yeah.
And I'm cruising along, I pass Luna Park, and then, you know, my pace started to slow down a little bit, right? And I was kind of running a little bit more heel strike rather than that toe strike, and everything just got a little bit more effortful. And I remember this moment, it would have been around that 30 kilometer mark where I was my running pace was so slow that I reckon if I was walking, it would have been faster than my running pace, right? And like, I remember changing my running style to be a bit more of a speed walk just because I was using different muscles. I wasn't using like my, like, core. I was just like, oh, right. So I'm still going, right? And I remember just ahead of me, there was there's two people ahead of me. One was this really elderly lady. Another one was this really overweight man. Mm-hmm. And here I am, Mr. Fitness guy. Yeah. And ahead of me is this like lady that would have been 3 times my age, and a man who would have been like a good 50% heavier than me, just cruising along. I was like, I can't let this happen, right? So I remember I got around to maybe the area of the Shrine, right? So the Shrine in Melbourne. So I'm still a fair ways from the MCG, and I'm running along, and there's more people cheering you, right? And for some reason, I felt like this celebrity, right? Yeah. So I'm like, oh, these people are cheering me and only me. Yeah. So I'm running towards like Melbourne and I'm yelling for some reason. I don't know why. I'm yelling at these people. I'm like, party at the MCG.
Oh my God.
I'm like, party, let's go. You know? So I'm carrying on like an absolute idiot, right? I think I hit like my fifth wall or something like that. I was delirious or I was just Coach Steve, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm running along and I ended up making some friends along the way. So we create this little posse of us and we're all like picking up pace. We're getting excited about party at the MCG, right? Mm-hmm. And I remember every kilometer, there's this big banner being like, you know, we're 1 step closer. And I remember there was 1 kilometer, I think it was kilometer 38. Ooh. And it said 4Ks left.
Yes.
And I yell out, I'm like, 4Ks left. Fucking hell. Like this. So we're running along, Swanston Street or whatever, getting closer to Melbourne, the MCG. And I have like 5 people that I'm running with and we're getting faster and faster and faster. And I kept telling myself, I'm like, if you slow down, you're going to stop. If you stop, you're not starting again.
Yeah, true.
So I remember checking like my Fitbit that I was wearing afterwards. My fastest 5K out of the whole marathon was my last 5K, right? So I run into the MCG and there's people in the MCG, you know, clapping you. And I'm there like thinking that people are clapping me, right? And like I didn't run a really fast time. I ran this marathon in 4 hours, 40 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. So not a super fast time, but also within 5 hours, I was happy with it, right? So these people would have been sitting there for a few hours watching a few thousand people come through. And then there's me, right? Celebrating that these people are all cheering me that I've now completed this marathon, right? So I'm running around. But the worst thing was when I ran into the MCG, I thought that I was just going to be bang, done. But they make you run the lap.
Right?
I'm running the lap literally with my arms up in the air, like, woo! Like pointing at people in the crowd, like, yeah, come on, right?
Yeah, it's still a full footy over that you've got to run before you get your medal.
So, you know, you cross the line, you end up making your way over to the medal stand, and you get my medal, whatever, and then, like, I stopped.
Oh, I know that feeling. Isn't it? It's so weird how there's no pain, there's nothing until you stop.
Until you stop. And I remember I had a friend of mine who came and picked me up. It was actually the same guy who picked me up on my run the week before.
Yeah.
He picked me up in Melbourne. And he's like, oh, man, I parked just a few blocks over, right? And I was like, oh, bro, like, I don't think I can get there, right? So here I am, just run, like, you know, 42 kilometers of the marathon. And I'm eyeballing these couple of blocks being like, how the hell am I going to get over there?
I know. It's so weird, isn't it?
Oh.
It's the weirdest thing. As soon as you stop, it's almost impossible to get up again.
Yeah. And then, I remember sitting in the car, you know, the hour home, and trying to get out of the car afterwards was horrible. And actually, the first place I went to once I got home, I had a shower, I went to the gym.
Ah.
I went to the gym to foam roll. So, right. Yeah. So I, at the time, I had this idea that I'd get the barbell and foam roll with the barbell. Right.
Okay.
And I was like, I can't do that at home. So I went to the gym and I was doing some like soft tissue work, went home and then the rest is history. But that was an exciting time. And I retired from my running career after that. And I think the best thing that came out of that, similar to your story, Nick, is that I learned more about endurance events. I learned more about running. Mm-hmm. I learned more about running related injuries. And I learned that I can achieve things if I put my mind to it.
That's right.
And that's passed on over to other areas of my fitness career, let that be like my fitness resume. Then also within my professional career, such as The Challenge, right? Mm. You know, when I was first applying for the job at The Challenge, I had that imposter syndrome, being like, I'm not qualified to do this, right? But I knew that, okay, you got to put your mind to it and do it. And here we are, you know, a few years later, and we're in this role right now. So the lessons that I've learned from fitness-related events the stories that I've told myself from those fitness related events has passed on over to other aspects of my life and really dictated where I am now.
Absolutely. Mm. And yeah, you wouldn't change it for the world, would you? You know, no. None of that.
No.
You know, I'm so happy that I got to do all those endurance events because I think anything where you have to endure makes you. And you know, even in the gym when you're just starting out, you feel that way. It's like, oh gosh, you know, you might not be looking forward to going in.
No. And you know, thinking about the time that I gave to those things, right? You know, like the marathon, 5 hours, right? Mm. When I did like the Oxfam 100-kilometer walk, like that was 24 hours, right? Or my bodybuilding show, that was like 10 minutes on stage or whatever else I've done. Like there's such small little snippets of time when I look back at it now. And at the moment, it felt like forever, right? I'm sure you were the same in your triathlon. Like, you know, it was taking you hours to complete.
Oh my gosh, right? It took me so long. And I thought, it just seemed like this surreal day.
Yeah.
And it was just, it sort of seemed like time stopped.
And then now when you look back, it just seems like a little blink, right?
Yeah, it was a blink. Exactly, exactly. Yeah. But you can learn so much in those times and learn so much about yourself. And I am so, if I'd have given up, I reckon I'd be working just, you know, not doing what I love to do.
Yeah.
Just put it that way.
Yeah.
That was a moment that probably shaped my entire existence.
Yeah. So bringing it all back to the challenge, right? They're the stories that we're able to tell now.
Yes.
And if you're starting the challenge, think about the stories that you can tell at the end, right? Oh, I lost 10 kilos. I dropped 3 dress sizes. I can bench press 100 kilos now. I'm fit and strong. I can play with my kids. What story are you going to tell in 12 weeks? Because 12 weeks is going to go past whether you like it or not.
Exactly. Right? And also, you know, what kind of new foods are you going to introduce into your life? You know, what's your new routine going to be? How's that going to free up your time for other things? You know, what about even walking the 10,000 steps a day? Where's that going to take you? Who are you going to meet along the way?
Yeah.
What places in your suburb are you going to find? You know?
An interesting little gem, a little more science-y related, is that when introduced with a new diet plan, if an individual introduces other new behaviors in their life, they're more likely to adhere to that diet plan, right? So it was a study that looked at two groups, and one was just given the diet plan, and the other group was given a diet plan and weekly activities to do. Mm. I think they went like rock climbing, sailing, went to a few restaurants and stuff like that. And the group that were doing new activities were able to follow a new way of eating as well, because they kind of incorporated this new lifestyle, reinvented themselves, knew them, right? If you live your life as it is right now, you know, you wake up at the same time, you go to work at the same time, you come home and watch the same TV shows. And
get takeaway because you're tired.
Or you're trying to do all these behaviors and then you're trying to inject a new nutrition plan, right? Because food, you know, food builds our life. You may find it difficult if you still live the same routine. So here is Coach Steve's gem. If you want to improve your adherence to your nutrition plan, introduce new activities to your life. That could be maybe you go out on a date with your partner, maybe you take your kids out to, you know, a theme park, or you go for a new hike, or go to a new cafe that you've wanted to try, or trying like a new activity like rock climbing. Like doing these new things, inventing yourself again, can improve your adherence to a new way of eating.
I love that. Mm. That's and that so true.
Becomes the new story of you.
Yeah, absolutely. So what story are you going to tell yourselves in the next 12 weeks? Have a think.
Mm. Let's wrap it up there, Nick. So as a super summary, humans are storytellers. We tell stories to each other. And we are the narrators. We get to tell our own stories. And sometimes it's worth planning your story. How are you going to end it? How are you going to tell that story to other people? Be careful of the language that you use, because that can dictate your story and put you into certain pigeonholes. And, you know, we all go through adversity and tough times, just like Nick and I told. And tell more people your stories. Tell us your stories.
Share, because you're not alone.
You're not alone. That's it for the weekly show. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you.